Hello, and welcome back to Rant of the Rings Part 2, The Two Towers of Crap. I'm Frank.
I'm Steve.
And with me, finally, is my sister, Alyssa. Alyssa, say something.
Something.
She's here. All right, she has a pulse. We're good to go. Now, before we get this show underway, I just wanted to correct myself on one point from the previous episode, where we had argued about the ages of Merry and Pippin. And in the end, it turned out we were both right, as I kind of thought about it more. Because in the book, 17 years go by between the party and when Gandalf returns. So Merry and Pippin would have been youngsters at the time of the party. However, in the movie, no time seems to have passed. So at the most, you could say Gandalf has been away for about a month. Which means they would be the proper age at the party and when they went on the adventure.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So they were...
We were confused by the movie's, you know, incompetence. So, also, we did have a fourth person who was going to join us tonight, but unfortunately his computer has a virus, and it's completely foobar. He's working on it, and he feels bad for missing it, so... Honorable mention to tonight's cast is my buddy DJ.
Hello, DJ.
Hello, DJ.
Yep.
You sexy.
Thank you for listening. Sorry, you're going to join us this time around.
Yeah, next time for sure, if he gets his computer to work. So, anyway, we're going to dive right into Two Towers, because that's how the movie starts. And the first of my notes here is, well, of course we have to start off with a big, dumb action movie bullshit. That, of course, is the fight of Gandalf with the Balrog falling down the pit. And despite being pissed, you know, griping about the movie itself, I have to grudgingly admit, it's a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, I liked it. Nothing's more awesome than seeing an old man take down a 2,000-year-old demon. A demon of fire and shadow.
Yeah, that was, admittedly... a really good scene, despite the fact that obviously it was never... Well, in the book, when Gandalf reappears in Fangorn Forest and tells Aragorn and everybody what happened, he describes the fight then and everything that happened, how they fell into like the pools down way below the mountain, how they found their way back up finally to the top. You know, how the fight lasted for days, really.
That old man's got some stamina.
Well, you know, he's obviously not a real person. He just looks like an old man.
Yeah, of course.
But, so.
That plays on later on, though, in the, what was that, in Rohan?
What?
When Gandalf goes to see, the king?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, King Theoden, I think his name was.
Yep, Theoden.
Yep, when Theoden was being... Oh, well, we'll get into that eventually, but...
I love
how he just, like, shows up, and they're like, we need to take your staff. And he's like, you don't want to part an old man with his walking stick, would you?
Yeah, well, again, it's one of the good lines, because it came from the book. Frodo is still worthless and indecisive. He shows no ambition or determination.
Here's that cardboard again. Let's carry it.
All the scenes where they're hiking through the mountains, you know, he just looks like he's just plodding along. He doesn't give a shit.
after the last Zotcast, I couldn't help but go out and look for a cardboard cutout of of Frodo.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. I'm like, I'm going to use that eventually. We'll see.
The ring is still acting out in ways that it shouldn't be able to. Yeah, Gollum's intro has changed and more action movie shit. In the book, Frodo and Sam get down the cliff with the rope. The rope comes off when Sam calls it, and then they walk off a bit. But then they see Gollum coming down the cliff face behind them, so they crouch behind a rock and wait for him to come down so they can confront him. And Gollum slips and falls. And Sam jumps out and you know, goes after him, but Gollum just jumps up and grabs a hold of him and starts, you know, gnawing on his shoulder and would have killed him if Frodo wasn't there. But in the movie, they're pretending to be asleep. Gollum is creeping down right on top of them, talking very loudly, and like loud enough to wake up anybody, really.
Yeah, you can hear his voice echo.
Yeah, really. He is being so incredibly loud and stupid.
He really is. He really... It's like, Gollum, seriously, how do you not know? You're like one of those villains who pretty much, like, try to whisper under your breath right in front of the person you're meeting.
People.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like...
I mean, don't forget, he is technically a hobbit. Hobbits have a natural, you know, just natural ability of moving silently beyond anything else.
He's been spending way too much time in Misty Mountains.
I guess. But
I think that's where, yeah, that's where they found them, right? Where he met Bilbo.
Well, the part about him talking to himself on the way down,
yeah,
that is what he was doing in the book. But what he was doing in the book, you know, what was happening in the book is he wasn't coming down right on top of, you know, Frodo and Sam pretending to be asleep.
But I'm saying that...
Yeah.
Okay, Gollum spent so much time in the mountain that he got used, like, he got used to being able to, like, hide because he would have the ring, and then he'd sneak up on the orcs and kill them and eat them and so on and so forth, that it's just like, the outside of the mountain, it doesn't work like that anymore. You can't just be invisible and be loud and, you know, and have...
Again, even if he was invisible, he still would have had to be quiet to sneak up on the orcs. So he knows enough to shut his mouth when he's stalking something. This, in the book, he didn't know he was being watched, so he was talking to himself on the way down.
I suppose he was using his outside voice.
Okay, the idea that the hobbits would drag Gollum by a rope around his neck is cruel and entirely un-hobbit-like. I couldn't believe it when I saw that. They were dragging him along like a dog with a rope around his neck. In the book, they tie the rope around his ankle, and he immediately starts squealing in pain because it was made by the elves.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
And they get the promise out of him, and then they take it off. They don't, like, put it around his neck and drag him, kicking and screaming the whole way. That's horrible. That is, I mean, I know they're not human, but that's still inhumane. All right, Merry and Pippin have a much easier time with the orcs in the movie than in the book. In the book, they get roughed up pretty bad. I mean, they're getting thrown around, they're getting kicked, they're getting whipped, they're being forced to run most of the way before they finally just pass out from exhaustion and they have to be carried. But they were forced to run a long way. In the movie, they just get carried all the time. And apart from that one scene in the gorge where they're force feeding Merry the drink or whatever it was, they're mostly left alone.
You know, that drink that they fed, you know, yeah, they fed him.
It was like peach syrup.
Is that really what it was? Peach syrup?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I watched all the behind the scenes discs.
Okay, but was it supposed to be?
What's that?
What was it supposed to be?
Oh, just some unnamed orc liquor. Just, you know, something to revive them.
Okay, because it was just like...
Harry and Pippin can't identify what it was, and they decide it's probably better not to think about it too much. They just know it works, and it, you know, helps revive them and get them on their feet.
Because I looked at it, and I was just like, it looks like if you were, like, chewing tobacco and you spit in a spittoon. That's exactly what it reminds me of.
Yeah, they wanted something that looked really thick and nasty, so they got, like, this peach syrup for, like, making juice.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's exactly what it looked like, though.
I was watching that, and I hate peaches anyway, so I was just, like, feeling bad for the actor having to do this take after take after take, drinking all this shit and having to puke it up.
Hey, at least it wasn't, like, prune juice.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming it still had a similar effect.
Maybe. Okay, Gimli is still a bumbling joke. Everything about his character is reduced to a short joke. Yeah.
Would you like a box?
He's literally a cartoon sidekick, just bumbling along behind the heroes and making funny comments and just generally being silly. G- Gimli is such a cool character. He doesn't deserve to be treated like that. I mean, he's undertaking this extremely difficult chase across Rohan, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because he's genuinely fond of the hobbits. And even Legolas at one point says, "The thought of those merry young folk being driven like cattle burns my heart."
Aww.
Yeah, exactly. They're,
because hobbits are cute.
They recognize the value of the Shire folk and how worthy they are. But Gimli is like grumbling and bitching and complaining the whole way and just, you know, making these little comments.
Talking about how he's...
very dangerous over short distances.
Yes, yes, exactly. They're good sprinters over short distances. Like, no crap.
Fuck you, movie.
Yeah, it's like, if you're going to be running for a while, of course you're going to lose all your steam.
All these bullshit Saruman scenes shoehorned into the movie add some exposition, but take up time that could have been better used to tell the real story.
And what is the real story?
I'm saying all the things that were changed throughout the rest of the movie. Which we're talking about. But, like, things that should have been in the story were cut out or left out to make room for all these new Saruman scenes they made up for the movie. And we don't need to see him, you know, breeding the orcs and cutting down the forest. In the book, people just talk about, we've been over here while Saruman's, you know, breeding orcs, and Treebeard says, "Yeah, Saruman's been cutting down my trees." Well, we'll get to that in a few points here.
Well, you have to kind of show it, because it's just like, how is he creating this army? Then you got to cut to, you know, at least show that they're...
Well, I'm just saying, we don't need to be shown all this stuff.
You're right. They've already established it in the Fellowship.
Exactly. We know Saruman's doing this shit.
I mean,
and
we're going to have to agree with...
All the Saruman scenes in Fellowship shouldn't have been there. Theoden is ridiculous. Way too obvious he's under some kind of magical control, but no one just steps up and kills Wormtongue because reasons. Every single person in Edoras watching Theoden turn into this fucking apple mummy.
This puppet.
He looks like he's been covered in cobwebs for 50 years. And it's obvious it's Wormtongue doing this. It's obvious the one guy dressed all in black with greasy hair and pale skin just might be evil.
Are you sure? Hey, you're profiling. He could be in Gryffindor.
No, fucking Wormtongue. Be more obvious, why don't you? Nobody else looks or dresses or talks or acts like him. And nobody says, you know, this guy might not be on the level. Theoden looks like a travel brochure for death. And it all started when Wormtongue came around. It's like nobody puts two and two together and say, hey, guess what? This shit's not going to fly. But no, because he's the king and he says it like, okay, we'll just let Legions of the Graveyard smash.
No, dude, you're being, like, super racist about this. Oh, just really? Because he's transparently evil doesn't mean he's evil. You have to be more understanding.
No, I don't.
Even then, Frank, evil is just a matter of perspective.
Well, you know, Wormtongue was doing this because he needed it. Theoden was trying to find a new look. And Wormtongue was just like, I've got a great idea for you.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Wormtongue just wanted to bang anyone. It's all good.
Yeah. Okay, Merry should have no idea what's going on in Fangorn or have any knowledge of the Ents. In the book, we hear this exposition from Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli after they finally get to the borders of the forest and camp that night, and they tell stories about the legend of the Ents, or the, as the elves call them, the Orodrin. But in the movie, we gotta change everything. Merry just explains this to nobody when Treebeard suddenly appears.
Notice in the movie they mention twice about, like, the wives of the races. So they talk about the woman dwarves, you know, and how no one ever really sees one because they're so alike in appearance to the male dwarves.
Yeah.
And that everyone just assumes that the dwarves just sprout out of the ground, you know? like potatoes.
Well, that's just a little reference taken out of the appendices.
Okay. And how the Ents were talking about how they lost their Ent wives somehow.
Yeah, we'll get more into that later.
Don't be hasty, Unstevious.
Mm-hmm. All right, the Riders of Rohan just showing up in the middle of, out of nowhere, and starting the attack in the middle of the night instead of following and hemming the orcs together. In the book, the Riders of Rohan chase the orcs for most of a day, really, and they keep like gradually closing them in and keeping them from scattering and driving them towards the forest. You know, and then at night they circle the orcs so they can't escape under darkness. And then at daybreak, they begin the main attack and, you know, wipe out the orcs. So the actual battle took place in morning, but Merry and Pippin were dragged out by that one orc because he thought one of them might have the ring and he was trying to get it back to Mordor. So that one orc, you know, stole Merry and Pippin from the Isengard orcs, snuck off with them out beyond the ring of fires, watch fires that the riders had made around the orcs. But then before he could get away, a horseman came up and killed him. And then Merry and Pippin were able to cut their ropes with the orc's dagger and crawl away into the forest before it actually started.
And that's not how it went in the movie.
No, in the movie it was just a big dumb action sequence. They just came out of nowhere. Shit just got crazy.
Those stupid orcs, they were hungry, and they were just like, they look tasty. It's like they were neat. It's like they need to be brought back unspoiled. Oh, can we have their legs? They don't need their legs.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, jeez. It's like the obvious, you know, they resorted to finally the obvious answer. Just kill one of the other orcs and just have them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cannibalism. That's not evil. Yeah.
Although, of course, there was never any mention of that in the book, but that's... What can you expect? Aragorn does not proclaim his true titles or identity to the Riders, once again sticking to the bullshit reluctance he has. In the book, when Aragorn meets the Riders, and they ask who they are and why they're in Rohan, Aragorn straight up says, "I am Aragorn, son of Arathorn. I am the heir to Isildur and the king of Gondor. This is the sword of Elendil. Hello." And actually, in the book, there's this really interesting part where, to the eyes of Legolas, it seemed that a white flame flickered across the brow of Aragorn as he said this, like a crown. Like, in that one moment when he was just throwing out his, you know, "I am the king" attitude, he did it with such authority and such power that, to a perceptive creature like an elf, it was actually visible.
Like an aura.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. So that I always thought that was a really neat thing in the book. Like, well, there was another reference like that in Fellowship, where Gandalf is talking to Frodo the morning after he woke up in Rivendell when he's still in bed, and in the narrative it says that Gandalf, looking at Frodo's left hand, sees a slight hint of transparency left over from the effects of the sliver of the knife. So there's all sorts of neat little things like that in the book that never come out in the movies.
Like he was still kind of fading into the other realm.
Well, at the last moment he was crossing over into the Wraith world, which is why he could see the Black Riders so clearly at the river. So they pulled him back in the nick of time, but for a little while he was there, and there, to a wizard's eye, there is a slight residual effect. So, trying to build up any kind of suspense that the hobbits died during the battle. Bullshit. In the book, the narrative follows them into the edge of the forest, where they watch the battle, but when the battle starts moving towards the edge, they turn and run off into the woods, so they never see how the battle ended and how they could have been rescued by the Riders. In the movie, orc chasing the hobbits into the forest? Bullshit. Meeting Treebeard the way they do? Bullshit. Showing Gandalf to Merry and Pippin in the forest? Bullshit. In the book, you know, the hobbits, you know, kind of hike through the woods for a while, following the river. They see a gleam of sunlight. They move towards it to a hill. They climb up the hill and look around. And then because they think that there's just an old tree standing there in the sunlight. That turns out to be Treebeard. He turns them around. They talk for a while. Then they march off towards Wellinghall up in the woods at Treebeard's house. Obviously, in the movie, we had to turn that whole thing into a big, dumb action sequence. So the orc that was supposed to be dragging them out of the stealing them from the Isengard orcs and being killed outside the watchfires, he's now chasing the hobbits into the woods, and he gets stomped on by Treebeard, who's just there. Oh, man.
Treebeard was sleeping, though.
Yeah, so that was stupid. Well, let me explain why it was so stupid, seeing Treebeard like that, introducing Treebeard like that. We're supposed to initially get the idea that the Ents are sleepy and, you know, kind of tame. But it's not until the battle inside Isengard that the hobbits for the first time see the Ents unleashed. And that's what makes it so much more impressive when all of a sudden these slow, kind of sleepy old men, as they seem, suddenly become charging bulls, tearing the shit out of everything. So that's why it means more when Gandalf says the Ents are going to wake up and find out they're strong.
Well, they did show that in the film, though.
A little, yeah, but...
Because he nodded off in the sleep in the mid-sentence.
I just think portraying the story as it was in the book would have been better. Because they did that in the Bakshi film, and that worked out fine. Although it was a weird way to end the Merry and Pippin subplot, because after that point, you never see them again. Okay. Gollum's constant whining and carrying on like a fucking clown. That was the scene where he's chasing the fish down the river. I mean, he's just... It's so completely outlandish the way Gollum behaves. Again, with that stupid voice. And he's Andy Serkis is just hamming the fuck out of it. You know, he is seriously overacting. Gollum is supposed to be sly and kind of quiet and creepy and slinking around everywhere. Andy Serkis has him, you know, screaming all the time and, you know, literally shrieking all the time and just being the most obnoxious thing ever.
I feel bad for his voice, though.
Yeah, serves him right. Clear skies and sunny in the middle of the dead marshes?
it looked cloudy to me.
Yeah, but it was, you could still see sunlight shining on the actors, and you can still see their shadows. In the book, the cloud cover over the marshes is so thick that it's like evening time, always. Except at noon, when a very pale shadow of the sun can be seen. But this is a big problem they had in these movies was, you know, when it was supposed to be dark, like the darkness of Mordor, it was never dark.
It's just shadowed.
Yeah. Frodo falling into the water and getting attacked by ghosts. More bullshit action movie crap.
Well, so this is, when I was watching that, all I could think of was like, they should really use this makeup and these effects for Ghostbusters 3. I said, this would be awesome. They should take note.
No, these are not active spirits. They are just visions of the dead lying in the pools. Which obviously cannot be touched because Gollum once tried, and we can guess why. Okay. Frodo playing around, well, lying around playing with the ring. Does this guy have any will or inner strength at all? He's literally sitting there at night while they're camping and just holding the ring in his hand and stroking it like Gollum. Like, really? In movie time, you've had this thing for maybe a couple of months now.
You have to. Well, the thing is even in movie time, they're getting closer to Mordor, to the source. They're getting closer to the source.
Yeah, but
so you have to think that the will of Sauron is stronger.
Not yet. In the book, this effect still takes a lot longer to take it. You know,
yes,
really
of
start.
Course not yet because now they're not as close as they were or as they will be.
Yes, but the idea that Frodo would be so under the ring spell that he would be sitting there, you know, stroking it, you know, gazing at it longingly like a lover.
Well, at least he didn't look like a crack addict like Bilbo did at Rivendell.
In the book, even though Frodo's only had it for, you know, just over 17 years, when they're crossing the marshes, he's just tired from carrying the weight. Otherwise, he's fine. You know, as fine as he can be for bearing the ring.
Yeah.
But he's not, like, sitting around staring at it like a... stupid movie. Gollum forgetting his name as if the elves never called him by name when he was in prison. As if he didn't tell Gandalf his name when he was in prison. because otherwise, how could Gandalf have ever known Gollum's real name? His name was Sméagol. And in fact, if you read The Hobbit carefully, Gollum never names himself. Bilbo just calls him Gollum.
Yeah, he calls him Gollum because
Yeah, the narrative calls him Gollum, but Bilbo never calls him Gollum, but somehow he just came to be called Gollum from that point on. Gollum never names himself or introduces himself by name.
But he chokes Gollum, though.
So yes. It's just a fun little oversight in the narrative that he used to be called Gollum by people who used to know him before, but then people still call him Gollum now, you know, on their own. So Gandalf's reappearance is rushed and carries no suspense or drama. In the book, Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli follow the Hobbit's prince up to the cliff where they found Treebeard. And while they're up there looking around, they see an old man robed in gray, you know, moving around among the trees. And he comes up to them, and they can't see his face because his hat is pulled low. And eventually, gradually, he shows himself to them and reveals that he's actually Gandalf. And then they have that whole thing, and they sit and talk for a while about not just what happened in Moria, but also how he came to Lothlorien. You know, and he sits and listens to Aragorn tell everything that happened since Moria. So there's a lot more talking and exposition there, and mm-hmm. it's a little more leisurely. But in this, he just walks up, and 5 seconds later, they see his face, and like, yeah, this happened in Moria. Okay, now we're going. Treebeard seems very simple-minded. Yeah. Yeah, he literally is portrayed as this doddering old man, when really he is... In the book, despite talking slow, this guy is really sharp. He is on top of his game. He's in charge of this forest, and he knows what's going on.
Was it you, or was it... You mentioned it, I think, last time, that the Ents were evolved from the water that was, like, I don't know, magicked by the elves, right?
What? Oh, where the hell did you get that from?
I forgot, to be honest. The tree ants were evolved from the water that they were drinking, right?
I never heard this. Okay.
How did the ants come to be?
It wasn't discussed. They're just one of the races that exist in Middle Earth.
All right. For some strange reason, I had the idea that the water was blessed by the elves, and when it...
Now, the Ents brew their own kind of water to be more like food, more sustaining like food. So that maybe there's some kind of natural magic in it, but...
Yeah, I think they did show that, though, when... I
never heard any explanation for where the Ents came from. Except the fact that it was the Ents who taught the trees and the Ents how to speak. It was the elves, I'm sorry. Alright, Gandalf and Aragorn standing around talking about exposition that could have been better explained as it was in the real story. Gandalf says like 2 or 3 times, or maybe they were like repeating the same audio clip of him saying, things go evilly in Rohan. You know, things go badly with the king. It's like, yeah, we get it. The king needs help. All right, stop repeating it. You were supposed to be, like, just riding hard without talking a whole lot. The whole scene outside the gates of Mordor is bullshit. The idea that Frodo is intent on rushing the gate without stopping and waiting, without listening to, without waiting to look around. The idea of them falling down and almost getting caught and having to use the cloak to hide as a rock.
Well, one does not simply walk into Mordor.
Yeah. No, that whole sequence was just forced drama, forced conflict. In the book, they sneak up to that little outcropping in the early hours of the morning, and they actually lay in that little hollow there all day long while they debate and try to decide what the hell they're going to do. And that's when they finally reveal to Gollum that Frodo has to get into Mordor, and Gollum reveals to them that, well, there's probably an easier way or a slightly more possible way to try if you go down south. And he has to explain everything before Frodo makes up his mind and decides to go. But there's never any of that shit where they fall down and Sam, you know, half buries himself in fallen rubble. So, yeah, that whole sequence was just dumb. Frodo only ever seems to act like he's in charge when Gollum is manipulating him. Again, Frodo is that useless that he is, again, he's literally just a meat puppet.
I was about to say that.
Yeah, the only time he, like, makes an order is after Gollum has, you know, convinced him that this is what he should say. Using the Willow scene from the Bombadil chapters in Fangorn is just stupid. Yeah. I mean, in their defense, they would say that it was just a fun little reference, but I didn't see any point of having that in there. I mean, the idea that they just sleep on the ground in the middle of the forest instead of showing Treebeard's house, which would have been fucking cool. I mean, Treebeard actually has, like, a little house built into the side of a cliff.
I was going to say, why would he need a house? He's a tree.
All Ent houses are near sources of water, but the one house... Treebeard says he has several Ent houses, but the one he takes Merry and Pippin to is a place called Welling Hall up in the foothills of the mountains, and his house is literally a shallow bay carved into the foot of this gigantic cliff, and it's described as this really beautiful place. And inside, he's got, like, this big stone table, and he's got this low bed, you know, and that's where he keeps his jars full of Ent draught, and they sit and they drink, and Treebeard tells him about what's been happening in the forest, and he tells him what Saruman's been doing in the forest. See, the whole time in the book, Treebeard knows what Saruman's been doing in the woods, but he just hasn't, you know, decided what to do about it yet.
Okay.
In the book, Treebeard has no fucking clue. Saruman and his orcs have just been running roughshod throughout the forest, chopping down whole acres. It's like, come on, dude. Are you that senile? Are you that useless in the movie that you don't know this is going on in your forest?
Well, he could have been sleeping the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you think that, like, that it was just very swift that when they started preparing the tower, you know?
Yeah.
For war and all that.
Alright, the scene, transplanting, another comment about transplanting lines from one character in one part of the book to another character in another part of this movie. The part where Wormtongue is talking to Eowyn and talking about who knows what you've spoken to the Watchers of the Night when all the walls of your bower seem to come in before you. You know, that's all stuff that Gandalf says much later on in the Houses of Healing after Eowyn's been hurt fighting the Witch King. When they're talking about how far back her unhappiness goes to the days of Wormtongue. So having Wormtongue, you know, speaking Gandalf's lines is by itself pretty a bad decision. The idea of Aragorn and his friends fighting their way alone across the throne room of Theoden is fucking stupid. In the book, Gandalf does all the talking. He is in charge of this situation. Everybody knows it. In the book, Theoden's possession is much more subtle. He's been convinced over time by Wormtongue's cunning words. He's been convinced that he's old and that he's feeble and that it's best to let things be. It's only when Gandalf finally comes in and, you know, exposes the lies of Wormtongue that Theoden starts to get his shit together. So Gandalf doesn't come in and, like, fight with the spirit of Saruman through Theoden. That was more action movie bullshit.
I like that, though. The whole mentality.
No,
like,
message.
So no, listen. No. Listen.
Okay.
The whole mentality. Like, no, mm-hmm. I like what was in the book, as you said. Just, like, tell him, like, oh, you're not looking so good. And he's like, nah, I'm fine. Oh, no, really. I mean, you're looking like you're tired and feeble. And then he starts to actually believe it and becomes it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously Wormtongue was coached by Saruman on the kind of things to say to make Theoden believe he was weak. But the idea that Saruman himself was actively possessing the king is ridiculous. Theoden acts like a madman instead of a wise and magnanimous king, and this carries over to the second movie where he at first shows reluctance to ride to Gondor. Theoden is a wise person. He is a kindly man. I mean, we see this most of all in the way he treats the hobbits. He takes to them right away. In the movie, like, even the actor acknowledges that he was, like, playing it like friggin' King Lear. You know, he's just this haggard, bitter old man who's pissed off at the world.
for whatever
reason. And it's like, no. He is a king. He is a noble king. He is a good king. In the book, he calls, after being revived and going outside and, you know, holding a sword again and getting his strength back and, you know, realizing that he's not weak. He shows wisdom and mercy to Wormtongue despite everything that's happened because he's a good king. And he allows Wormtongue to leave without being hurt. In the book, when they're at Isengard, in the movie, when they're at Isengard, they try to have, they try to bring some of that back to the character, but it's completely wasted because they kill Wormtongue right then and there. But
so that's not how it went in the book?
No.
Okay, because I was kind of rooting for Wormtongue to kind of, snap out of it.
Yeah, despite everything that happened, Theoden gave him a load of chances to redeem himself. Until finally he said, okay, go ahead, but next time I see you, that's it. So he let him go. And even at Isengard, he kind of curses him, but he doesn't threaten him much. So anyway, Grima getting to Isengard before the Battle of Helm's Deep. In the book, the Battle of Helm's Deep is literally the next night after all that. It takes Grima several days to get to Isengard after that because he has to go ride far around to avoid all the armies and shit. So in the book, he doesn't get there until after the Ents have flooded the plain and trashed the place. And the Treebeard, makes him go into the tower and stay there.
Go to your room.
Gandalf had been there to warn them that they were coming.
Go to your room, Saruman.
Yeah, no, the movies keep fucking up the time frame of everything. There's just no excuse for it.
Kind of make it. Yeah, you can walk the entire. No, you could take a horse throughout the entire Middle Earth in just a week.
Yeah, really. Bullet train from Osaka is running smooth.
Around Middle Earth in 80 minutes.
Monorail. Frodo and Sam arguing. Everything about that is just wrong. In the book, Frodo and Sam are the best of friends. Sam is completely devoted to Frodo, and Frodo trusts Sam completely. Movie Frodo is so completely stupid and useless. He has no will. He has no intelligence. Gollum can just fucking whisper a couple things in his ear, and Frodo buys into it instantly and starts mistrusting Sam and fighting with Sam and snapping at him. No.
That's not until the third movie, though.
Not even... No. It starts here, when... Again, in that scene where Gollum is trying to catch the fish, and Frodo and Sam start arguing about, Sam calling him Smeagol names. And it actually gets kind of nasty. Like, really? We're doing this? The scene of Smeagol trying to banish his Gollum half. No. His two halves are permanently meshed together. At no point does Gollum ever really change his ways. He just acts differently around the hobbits after making his promise. At the bottom of everything, he still wants to get the ring back. Gollum is supposed to hate all light, but he seems to have no trouble moving about during the day in sunlight. In the book, Gollum only ever let them move at night, when the moon wasn't shining, or when they could hide in shadows, for very good reasons. Even though they're moving through Ithilien, it's still country held by the enemy now. There could be spies hidden in the woods watching anywhere. So it only makes sense that they would always move in darkness. In the whole scene where they cooked the rabbits, they were camping out for the day.
Okay, that's another thing I didn't quite understand. If orcs, or the orcai, should I say, if the orcs were supposed to be, allergic to the sunlight, so to speak, and stuff, why are they able to move around now?
Because they just hate the sunlight because they're evil creatures, and that's all.
Okay, so it didn't really, hurt them or anything, it's just they just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, because did Saruman somehow breed them a certain way to make them not so...
Yeah, making the half-orcs, they were more resistant, they were more tolerant of the light, since they were half-men also. Faramir acts completely out of character. I could not believe it when I first saw this. In the book, Faramir, despite being on his way to fight a battle, they actually meet the hobbits before the battle starts, and he leaves a guard to watch over them while he goes out to fight the battle. But throughout it all, Faramir is soft-spoken, he's courteous, you know, he's not going to take any bullshit, but he's not going to, you know, the way he acts in the movie, he acts like he's a freaking cop almost. He's pushy, he's demanding, he's suspicious, and...
all he wants is his father's love. That's yeah, all but he wants.
But he's still the son of a lord. He still has the blood of Numenor in him. He's still a good, charismatic, noble guy. And that's why everybody, you know, thinks so highly of him and are so willing to follow him, because he's such a lordly guy. So having him act like, you know, Javert from Les Mis, almost...
That's what I felt. Like, that's what I had in mind.
Just come with me, and that's it. So, just the idea that he would be so gruff with somebody, it really took me out of the story. The time frame for the move to Helm's Deep is all screwed up. I mentioned this before. The idea that they would take everybody with them to Helm's Deep when they know they're riding out towards battle, that was dumb. There was no reference to the ride to Helm's Deep being bothered by wolf riders. That was another stupid action sequence just shoved in there.
What? No wards?
No, all the women and children of Edoras were sent off towards Dunharrow up in the mountains, which was the safest place in the realm. Everybody else was riding towards Isengard, but then at night Gandalf looks north, realizes that there's an army coming, and sends them all to Helm's Deep instead. So they get there only just in time, and then the battle starts. So again, that's the day after Gandalf, you know, saved the king. But in the movie, it looks like it took them several days to get there. Yeah. There's that stupid scene with Eowyn trying to cook when she shouldn't be there at all. With the fact that she would try to do something like that anyway. Or that she would, you know, try to do something like that knowing she couldn't. That was dumb. That really bothered me. It was like a bullshit character moment that shouldn't be there. It didn't add anything to the movie. It made the characters dumber. Okay, we talked about this once before. Aragorn breaking up with Arwen over one conversation with Elrond, who also acts out of character. So when Aragorn sit there smoking his pipe and thinking about Arwen and all that shit, I cannot believe Elrond in the movies. He is so negative. Yeah, he, as far as he's concerned, there is no hope in anything. You know, it's, why would he be like this? I don't get it. But that he would talk Aragorn out of marrying his daughter when he would respect his daughter's choice. But again, the whole thing is completely rewritten from the ground up to go along with his reluctance to be king and all this bullshit, so...
We should hear from the peanut gallery. What does she think?
What do you think?
She's like, he's supposed to be thrown in her two cents as well, and then...
Yeah, she's... She's looking at doll shoes, I think, online.
That's okay. Allie's doing that Allie thing.
The important thing is she's kind of here almost. She said one thing a while ago. She just nods at me. Okay, again, what I said before. Bullshit action sequence with the warg attack. Bullshit suspense trying to make it look like Aragorn dies. I could not believe that. Like, who the fuck is going to... you know, fall for that. Who? I ask you, who? Who was that scene written for? I could not believe how stupid that was.
Yeah, he's obviously, you know, one of the main players in the movie. They aren't just going to write him off real quickly.
Yep. More silly attempts to include Arwen in the movies. Elrond should have faith that Aragorn is mankind's best hope for the future, not scorn his efforts and assume he can't succeed. Yeah, this is what I was just saying. Bunch of tacked-on bullshit about Arwen leaving for the ships. Totally pointless flashback about Boromir. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Calm down, buddy.
All right, yeah. I'm sorry.
Calm down, fanboy.
I know. I get so worked up sometimes. I'm sorry. Sometimes I get excited.
I get that way about Doctor Who, where everyone's like, calm down, Steve. I'm like, no, not this time.
All this force shit about Elrond trying to force Arwen into leaving Middle-earth before the outcome of the war is decided. I don't know where they got this suggestion from. It was never in the book. It was never in the appendices. I mean, at this point, it's not even the same story anymore. It really isn't. This is a complete fan fiction from beginning to end. This has... left the book far behind, and we're completely in fan fiction territory. this whole flashback about a totally pointless flashback about Boromir. That was completely made up.
This has My Immortal written all over it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. In the movie, fucking Denethor. In the movie, Denethor shows up at Osgiliath, talks to Boromir about the dreams that he and Faramir have been having, tells him that he should go to Rivendell, and in the movie, fucking Denethor tells Boromir he suspects the ring has been found. But the movie has Denethor telling Boromir that he wants him to go find out if the ring has really been found and try to bring it back.
Like, for one thing, how did he know about the ring?
Yes.
Like, it was supposed to have passed off in a shadow, everyone's forgotten about it.
Well, I guess they're going on the assumption that he would have seen it in the Palantir, but the movie is suggesting that Boromir was sent to Rivendell in the hopes of getting the ring is fucking stupid. It's so fucking stupid and unbelievable. Yeah, he's going there because Elrond is wisest of lore masters and they're trying to figure out what the hell the prophetic dream means. That's all. He didn't understand what Isildur's bane meant. He said he had to find out, seek for the sword that was broken. The dream came several times to Faramir and only once to Boromir. Faramir was the one who should have gone. And if he had, things would have worked out much differently. Because as I pointed out once before, in the book, never once is Faramir tempted by the ring. Because he is more true-blooded Numenorean than Boromir was.
May I make one observation?
You may.
Alright, Faramir is completely treated as the, like, red-headed stepchild.
Faramir is completely rewritten by an idiot who doesn't understand how the characters are. Who the characters are and what makes them who they are. In Return of the King, at least, when Faramir starts using more lines that came from the book, and that's when he's acting like he's supposed to, after he comes to his quote-unquote understanding of Frodo, but...
Now, who wrote the screenplay?
It was Peter Jackson and...
Really?
Yeah, and his wife and Philippa Boyens or whatever it was, the other third person was. He, his wife, and their mutual friend worked on the screenplay for all three movies.
Okay, so you can still yell at Peter Jackson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's completely his fault. Yet all again, right. Sam isn't around when when Faramir takes Frodo to see Gollum in the pool. In the book, obviously, they find Gollum in the pool. Faramir comes to wake up Frodo and get his opinion. And again, in the book, this is done much more respectfully, because Faramir isn't a dick, and he already knows about the ring, because after they eat that first night they get to the cave, they go off to the side and talk for a while, and Sam blurts out something about the ring and gives them away. And Faramir says, believe it or not, it was safe to declare it to me. I want to help you in any way I can because now I understand what you're doing. So in the book, they come to their quote-unquote understanding much sooner, the same day that they meet, in fact. And Faramir, he behaves in character the entire time. He never drags them down to Osgiliath, which I really couldn't believe they did that in the fucking movie. Like, the next day, he lets them go. Or he sends them on their way with, like, fresh provisions and stuff. So Frodo, Sam, and Gollum still have to march through Ithilien, but they make their own way down because Faramir and his men have to get back to the river and back across. They have war stuff to do. Faramir allows his men to beat Gollum. It's just wrong. That was so completely out of left field. I'm so speechless. This movie is just... I'm not even watching it now, and it's just... Faramir allowing his men to beat Gollum. What the fuck is this? A Charles Bronson movie?
Charles Bronson would beat Gollum?
Charles Bronson would beat anybody, let's be fair. But the fact that Faramir would just turn around and allow his men to rough up a prisoner, that is so completely out of character. I was just blindsided. I cannot believe they would put that in the movie, that they would do that. It just blows my mind. Theoden's attitude about their chances and his trust in Gondor, out of character. In the book, when the men of Rohan get to Helm's Deep, they are all in agreement that this is what they have to do. They are holding down the fort, they are preparing for a siege, They know they're in for a tough fight, but they're going to give it their best. In the book, Aragorn... I don't even know what the hell people's motivations were in this scene. It was so weird. Legolas is being negative, like, you're all going to fucking die. Aragorn trying to, you know, speak words of hope. Theoden, in the movie, has... He's just looking around. He's just completely... like, we're fucked. Again, the idea that Eowyn and the women and children were there. I mean, there were some women and children in the caves, but they were people who lived in that region. They weren't exiles from Edoras. So there weren't as many women and children there. Obviously, again, Eowyn wasn't there. There was never any of that shit with Aragorn getting lost and people thinking he was dead. Yes. And again, they're dragging it out.
Hearing from what you had to say about the, you know, the difference between the book and the movie. Yeah. In the movie, everyone just seems like there's absolutely no hope. Like, everyone's just automatically given up before they even freaking fight. You're just like, whoa, Sauron's returning. Fuck this noise.
Yeah.
Let's just end it now while we still can. Whereas, I have not read the book, but it sounds like everybody's more positive and this is our planet, we're gonna fucking save it.
In the book, when they have to turn aside in their ride towards Isengard, they meet other soldiers. They join up with other people who were scattered from a battle at the river further north. They get towards Helm's Deep. They find there's already a pretty large garrison there. So with the force they brought with them, they now actually have enough men to man the walls and put up a good defense. Okay, let's not get too far ahead again. Yeah, this is what I talked about before. The people of Rohan and Eowyn are not supposed to be in Helm's Deep, but Dunharrow in the mountains, where it's safe. Sending all these people to a fortress where they know an attack can happen is absolutely retarded. The movie bends over backwards, trying to make Rohan's case as desperate as possible, as if they aren't a warrior people with a great army. Once again, PJ is making changes to the story to add drama to the scenes that are already dramatic enough if told right. Yeah. The notion that a force of elves from Lorien is absurd. Helm's Deep is a long way from Lorien, and they would never have made it, nor would they have gone anyway, since Lorien is already under attack. Also, the last alliance was just that, the last. Elves will not go to war with men anymore. Their part in managing Middle-earth is past. There was no excuse to have the elves show up. That was just beyond confusing to me.
See, I didn't know. I thought it was great when they were talking about how the old alliances, you know, still held and they wanted to be there to help.
They called it the last alliance for a reason. It was the last. And again, at that time, Lorien was under attack anyway. They didn't have any forces to spare to ride halfway across Rohan. They only could have gotten there at that time if they had left maybe around the same time the Fellowship had left in the first movie. That's a long way to go, and they were on foot. There was no fucking way the elves would have known to time their departure to arrive at the same night of the battle. It was completely idiotic.
Because montage scenes?
Yeah, really. The battle itself isn't bad, but this just goes back to my main point. All the important events of the story do take place, but all the events and details leading up to them have been completely changed with PJ's bullshit. The Ents are made to be totally oblivious, as if they're too simple to understand the real importance of what's going on in the outside world. And Treebeard seems to have no idea what Saruman has been doing in the forest up till now. Yeah, we talked about this earlier. Treebeard would not know exactly what's going on in the forest that he's in charge of. The Ents deciding to do nothing. Bullshit. I don't understand why they would do that except to, you know, try to invent more stupid suspense. Like, why would they have spent that much time establishing the Ents only to have them say, oh, we're not going to do anything? The audience is just supposed to believe that the Ents are, okay, well, I guess they're not going to do anything now, so what else is going to happen? And then be surprised when the Ents do something. Yeah, in the book, the Ent moot goes on for about 3 days, and the hobbits spend most of that time with another Ent named Quickbeam, because he's one of the younger Ents. It's a nickname he got. He's one of the younger Ents, and he's what they would consider a hasty Ent. Because he said yes to an Elder Ent before the Elder Ent had finished answering his question one time. So yeah, they just spend 3 days hanging around a Quickbeam and waiting for the Ent. And then on the third day, everything goes completely quiet. And then the ants just explode in noise.
What?
When they finally come to a decision that their lives and their forest is in danger, and they're going to do something about it, then the whole forest almost literally explodes with their rage. And they march on Isengard, singing and stamping their feet in time and like drumming on their bodies with their hands. Their voice is like the music of horns.
Why would they remove that?
Exactly.
That is so deep. Like, that's
stirring is what it is.
It is so amazing. It shows the fact that they are a concentrated force of nature.
Mm-hmm.
That when they all decide on an emotion,
nature will make a decision and fight back.
Nature itself will scream it to the top of their lungs that they have made a decision because they are the Ents.
In the Lord of the Rings radio drama produced by the BBC, they do that scene, and it is fucking cool. They got the men's choir in there. And it's really stirring. The idea of all these Ents marching, they know they could be marching to their doom, but they're going to do it anyway because, you know, what other choice do they have?
I think PJ got rid of that because he wanted, like, the future battles to be more epic than
Treehouse. He got rid of that because he's a fucking idiot. He doesn't know how to make a good movie.
Hey, if they added that into that movie, nothing else would compare in sounds.
It doesn't matter. If they had done it right, it would have been fine. Killing Haldir, trying to make a dramatic death out of a throwaway character. In the book, we meet Haldir in Fellowship, and he's also the one sent to guide them to the boats on the day they leave Lorien. After that, we never see or hear from him again. The idea that they would throw that in and try to make it dramatic when he dies is like, well, first of all, he shouldn't even be there, so I don't give a shit. Yeah, Treebeard only now discovers Saruman has been killing his trees, as if he's unaware of everything that goes on in his territory. The whole scene in Osgiliath is just made-up bullshit because PJ loves forced conflict. Again, the idea that Faramir wouldn't listen to Frodo and Sam in the cave, and that he would take them prisoner and bring them all the way to Osgiliath before finally understanding. The whole scene with the Nazgul showing up and Frodo almost giving him the ring. Everything in this entire scene was completely made up.
I was gonna say that, like,
Frodo and Sam wrestling, Frodo almost killing Sam, Sam's big dumb sappy speech at the end.
Hey, I like that speech.
It was bullshit.
It was heartwarming. It was heartwarming.
It's bullshit. This movie betrayed me. Everything that happened from that the beginning of that scene to the end was complete and utter bullshit. It never should have been there. It didn't make any goddamn sense.
You're tearing me apart, Lord of the Rings.
Like, fuck, dude. Saruman emptied Isengard. There would have been no orcs there to fight the Ents. In the movie, as you know, there were still a whole shitload of orcs in there fighting the Ents. In the book, Saruman sent everybody. There were maybe a handful of people left there, like the guards at the gates. That was it. He sent everything he had towards Rohan. So when the Ents came busting in and started tearing the place up, they had free run. And they were only getting hurt when Saruman did something to make fire shoot up out of the plain. Otherwise, the Ents were in complete control.
The Ents are badass.
Yeah, they really were. Okay, we're wrapping this baby up. The entire end of the movie is complete bullshit. It's all new, made-up crap PJ decided would be exciting, but it's just more stupid action movie crap and forced drama. Again, I already said this. Frodo nearly killing Sam. Faramir finally understanding Frodo in the ring. Sam's sappy speech about hope. All bullshit. And finally, my last line here, because the movie pretty much ends with this, apart from the final conversation in the woods that should have taken place much later on in Return of the King about stories and all that. Faramir is way too heavy-handed and never hesitates to be rough with Gollum. In the book, again, the next morning after being found by Faramir, Faramir releases Gollum into Frodo's protection and custody under the strict rule that Gollum is only safe as long as he's with Frodo. So the idea that Faramir would grab Gollum and by the throat and pin him against the wall as soon as Frodo's back was turned. It's like, again, secret police shit. He's not like that. He would never be like that. In the book, he says he wouldn't even try to snare an orc with a falsehood. He wouldn't even lie to an orc. So he sure as hell wouldn't be rough with a miserable little piece of shit like Gollum. And again, the whole conversation about, you know, being in stories.
Yeah, I thought it was really nice, because I thought it was like a throwback from the Fellowship of the Ring, where they were talking about, like, you know, they wonder if they're going to be in stories, if their journey is going to be sun in stories and such. You know, and then they kind of just revisited that real quick, and you know, I thought, yeah, that's cool, because they've gone further than they thought, according to the movie, you know, because they just wanted to go to Rivendell and then back, and that was it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're thrown on this huge ass quest, bigger than one that Bilbo was in. You know, and
on one hand, I have to acknowledge the fact that they didn't really have an ending, because in the book, the way the book is written, Fellowship of the Ring is broken up into Book 1, which goes up until they get to Rivendell, Book 2, which goes up to the breaking of the Fellowship and Boromir's death. Book 3 in Return and Two Towers, Book 3 is nothing but the Aragorn stuff and Merry and Pippin. Book 3 is entirely set, takes place in Rohan. Book 4 goes back in time to 2 days after the Fellowship broke up, and it follows Frodo and Sam's story all the way until they get to Minas Morgul, and they get past Shelob, and Frodo was taken by the orcs. See, this is what threw me off when I first tried reading the books when I was younger, is the idea that it was two separate timelines going on, basically. Like, in Book 4, while Frodo and Sam were off doing things, it mentions, and meanwhile, Gandalf was in Isengard talking to Saruman. So it's kind of like the stories keep passing each other and then having to go back and pick up and carry on.
Yeah.
In Return of the King, Book 5, again, that's all Aragorn stuff and Merry and Pippin and everybody getting ready for the war. And that goes all the way up until the Battle at the Gates of Mordor. And then Book 6 goes all the way back to Sam trying to rescue Frodo and them making their way across Mordor, and then after the ring goes back and goes into the fire, that's when the two narratives mesh up and come back together. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I can see how that'd be interesting in book-wise.
Yeah, that really kind of threw some people off at first. And again, it's also kind of neat the way it kind of makes you want to read through it faster to see what happens at the other side of the story.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I do like books, though, that have alternating chapters, and the alternate chapters will have a different narrative.
Yeah.
I like books like that.
Having alternate stories, it also brings to mind the idea that Tolkien was making this almost like it was an actual history. He is trying to write a mythology and a folklore for England to replace the one that was destroyed during the Roman invasion. So this is his imagined folklore of England, dedicated to England, his home. So that was kind of neat how he did that. But anyway.
And thus ends the Two Towers of Crap.
Thus ends this next epic part of the journey. Join us next time for more of the same. Join us next time for when I completely lose my shit as I'm going through my notes and being reminded of all the horrible, horrible, horribleness that was Return of the King, and how the entire movie from beginning to end was just wrong and infuriating, and it may kill me. I could barely get through watching the movie.
Any passing remarks there, Allie?
She shakes her head no, because she's very creative that way.
That's how I express my creativity.
she like totally reminds me of Daria right there.
Wonderful.
Spirit is overflowing right now.
Yeah, my cup runneth under. Alright, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
I hope I haven't lost you with my incoherent ramblings.
That's okay. We're going to back this up with a soundtrack.
Yeah, we're going to back it all the way up.
Back it up, back it up, back it up, back it up.
Whatever.
My daddy taught me good.
Your dad taught you nothing.
All right, everybody. Until next time, I'm Steve.
I'm Frank.
And I'm around.
She's around.
So, hey, Frank.
Yeah?
You going to watch The Desolation of Smog?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't need another reason to kill myself.
Oh, okay.
And we out.